Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeely reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump Saturday said that during the APEC summit in Vietnam, he had two or three very short conversations with President Vladimir Putin, centering on the situation in Syria. Mr. Trump speaking to reporters in Air Force One as it flew from Da Nang to the Vietnamese capital, said a joint statement on Syria he agreed to issue with Putin is going to save a tremendous number of lives. The statement first released by the Kremlin says the two leaders confirmed the importance of de-escalation areas as interim steps to reduce violence in Syria, enforce ceasefire agreements, facilitate unhindered humanitarian access, and set the conditions for the ultimate political solution to the conflict. Putin told reporters in Da Nang Saturday the joint statement is one of extraordinary importance, confirming the principles of the fight against terrorism. Putin and Da Nang asserted that there is no confirmation of Russian meddling in the election in which Mr. Trump defeated Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. U.S. President Trump is in Vietnam again for a second day of meetings with Asian economic leaders after pushing a strong American First agenda in an address to regional business leaders. Mr. Trump issued a statement after attending a dinner hosted by Vietnam President Tran Đại Quang, saying, "We've come a long way.
We've come a long way, the United States and Vietnam. We've seen it from both sides of the picture. And this is the pleasant side. You are doing a spectacular job. Your people are doing a spectacular job. And in the United States, likewise."
The Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit is one of several summits Mr. Trump is planning to attend during a five-country Asian tour. This is VOA News. 11 Pacific Rim nations, including Canada, are moving ahead with talks for a resuscitated Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Leaders from Asia-Pacific nations meeting in Vietnam to push ahead with a massive trade deal without the U.S. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman is traveling with the president.
One of the first things that Donald Trump did when he became president was to pull the United States out of that 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership. But on the other hand, President Trump very clearly said today that he would do a bilateral trade agreement with any nation in the region that wants to be a partner of the United States, as long as they're willing to abide by what he calls the principles of fair and reciprocal trade.
The U.S. and South Korea began joint naval exercises Saturday in the Western Pacific. Three U.S. aircraft carriers also will participate in separate exercises Sunday with Japan's largest warship. Japan will also dispatch one of its two large helicopter carriers and two escorts to participate in the drills in the Sea of Japan and East China Sea. This display of military force is meant to pressure North Korea as U.S. President Donald Trump attends the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. The naval drills are aimed at sending a strong signal to Pyongyang of U.S.'s ability to rapidly mobilize a potent military force. The U.S. carriers transport a total of about 200 aircraft, including F-18 combat jets. The White House has called on all states and parties to respect Lebanon's sovereignty, independence, and constitutional processes. A statement released Saturday said in this sensitive time, the United States also rejects any efforts by militias within Lebanon or by any foreign forces to threaten Lebanon's stability, undermine Lebanese government institutions, or use Lebanon as a base from which to threaten other areas in the region. The White House said Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri has been a trusted partner of the United States, strengthening Lebanese institutions, fighting terrorism, and protecting refugees. Afghanistan has received an inaugural consignment of wheat from India through an Iranian port, opening a new trade and transit route for the landlocked nation that bypasses neighboring Pakistan. The strategic sea route, officials say, will help improve trade and transit connectivity between Kabul and New Delhi. The Washington Post newspaper reports that the body of one of the four U.S. Marines killed last month in Niger by militants was found with arms bound, apparently executed. The U.S. military has said the attackers are suspected to have been affiliated with the Islamic State. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
But she is a choice which is appreciated because of her professionalism, her determination, her commitment, and she has been part of the struggle.
The Gambian President Adama Barrow confirms the appointment of a vice president.
We welcome the decision of the ICC to open an investigation in the situation in Burundi because this is a relief for all the victims.
The Burundian government says it will not cooperate with an inquiry by the International Criminal Court into war crimes.
This is not the first case that is burning over the northwest region in particular. They've done this a couple of times before.
And the Cameroonian government imposes a curfew on the English-speaking city of Bamenda. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Gambian President Adama Barrow has officially confirmed the appointment of Fatoumata Jallow Tabajang as the vice president. The president chose her as his vice in January this year after defeating long-term President Yahya Jammeh in the last December elections. President Barrow described the new vice president as a woman with wealth of experience, which is highly required for building the new Gambia. To learn more about the appointment, I reached Amy Bojang Sisoho, Director of Press and Public Relations at the office of the Gambian president in the capital, Banjul.
Madam Vice President, that is Aja Fatoumata Tambajang. She has been appointed as required by the constitution, the current constitution. The president should appoint a vice president, and that is what he has done.
What is the significance of the choice of Madam Fatoumata Tambajang as the vice president of Gambia?
It's significant in many ways. Yes, she's like any other citizen, but she is a choice which is appreciated because of her professionalism, her determination, her commitment, and she has been part of the struggle to make sure that we have a peaceful change, and that change is something that has happened, and she happens to be a choice that the president wants to be his vice president.
Amy, what expertise does she have? What does she bring to the table to help the president in administering the country of the Gambia?
I think Madam Tambajang has a lot to contribute to the development of the country. She has the background of working in development, area of development, as a former UNDP employee. And that experience, along with her role she has been playing nationally, contributes a lot and has a great significance in contributing to ensure that the president is guided in the work he does in the area of human rights and development, and ensure that as also the person holding the portfolio of women, the issues of women's rights is on the agenda.
What has been the reaction of Gambians following the decision of the president to name her as the vice president?
I think what I have seen and the feedback I have been getting is that most people were happy that she has been appointed as vice president, because it has been on for a long time, we are talking. But it's good to go by what the dictates of the constitution says, and that is what the president was doing by to ensure that he should not be the one who should abrogate the constitution. And he has done that, and we are happy that he has been able to take that decision, and Madam Tambajang accepted that decision, swearing to uphold the constitution and as well as provide her service to the nation and support the president in his work.
Now that the president has had a full complement of his cabinet with the naming of the vice president, what should the people of Gambia expect from his administration by the end of the year and early next year?
I think they should expect him to continue to be serving the interests of the Gambia in terms of what is available to make sure that the socioeconomic development of the country is in the right track, to ensure that the human rights of the citizens are respected, promoted, and protected, and to ensure that citizens also contribute and realize that they have a role to play to support the government and his Barrow's administration to achieve the desired goals which we all fought for.
Amy Bojang Sisoho is the Director of Press and Public Relations at the Office of the Gambian President. She spoke with me from Banjul. The Burundian government says it will not cooperate with an International Criminal Court or ICC investigation into war crimes prosecutors suspect were committed by forces loyal to President Pierre Nkurunziza's government against political opponents. It came after the ICC ordered a formal inquiry into whether crimes including murder, torture, rape and persecution occurred between April 2015 to October 2017. But analysts say it will be difficult for the evidence to be gathered without the cooperation from the Burundian government. Vital Nshimirimana, the Burundian leader of the Group Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society, told me he welcomes the ICC's decision, saying it is a victory for the victims of the crimes allegedly committed by supporters of the government.
We welcome the decision of the ICC to open an investigation in the situation in Burundi, because this is a relief for all the victims of the mass atrocities ongoing in Burundi.
But the government has stated through Justice Minister Amy Laurentine Kanyana that Burundi will not cooperate with the Hague-based court.
This is not the first time that the government people are saying that they will not cooperate with the ICC, because it is likely that the government knows what it has been committing, coordinating, facilitating the crimes against the opposition, civil society, and all the population believed to be opposed to the violation of the constitution in Burundi. And then this is what led the government to withdraw from the ICC. Now, saying that it will not cooperate is meaningless, because it is an obligation that derives from the international obligations.
The government will not allow ICC investigators to go to the country. Eyewitnesses could be tampered with. Don't you think that the ICC work will be made more difficult because of the non-cooperation of Burundi, which the government in Bujumbura plans to do?
Until now, the ICC has been collecting information and some substantive evidence from very far. And this is what led the Office of the Prosecutor of the ICC to request the preliminary chamber to say that it authorizes the opening of the investigation. And some victims are on the ground in Burundi, but many more are in neighboring countries and even very far from Burundi. And due to many means, including collections through IT means and other means, and the involvement of the victims and the civil society organizations, international NGOs and national NGOs, these combined have gathered a number of evidence that will allow the ICC to determine the case.
Vital Nshimirimana is the Burundian leader of the Group Forum for the Strengthening of Civil Society. He spoke with me from Brussels, Belgium. The Cameroonian government has imposed a curfew on the English-speaking city of Bamenda. The administration in Yaoundé also ordered that all business and public places remain closed between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. local time until November 23. Only vehicles used by the government, police, army and emergency services will be allowed to operate. The curfew was imposed after the government blamed what it called secessionist terrorists of killing three gendarmes in Bamenda during the week. The killings mark an escalation of the crisis that started last year with lawyers and teachers' work boycott. For reaction to the curfew, I reached Joe Fru-Indi, founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF, in Bamenda.
This is not the first curfew that banning over the northwest region in particular. They have done this a couple of times before. But this one is on the premise that a gendarme officer was killed in Jakiri Kumbu, in So, and another one killed in Bayerenkwen, and one killed at the entrance to Bafut. And so they are looking for the assailants. But what I'm at a loss. Because I do not know with which type of guns they got these officers killed. Because the officers are always well armed and well protected.
The Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomo said the gendarmes were cold-bloodedly assassinated by terrorists with weapons of war.
Yes, sir. But they have people come up to that. When we say terrorists, they are not people from outside. They are children inside that have been pushed to the wall. And they have no other option than to fight back. I condemn that. I don't subscribe to that. But then not everybody has my frame of mind to accept that people are on simple demonstrations, teachers requesting their rights and lawyers requesting their rights, and you have to go out to start shooting and killing. When you kill people, and most of the people killed were not armed, when you kill them, no policeman or gendarme or soldier has ever been punished for illegal killing. And they tell you that they don't know which gendarme killed. You see the distributed bullets in Cameroon and people can shoot at random. But from the background, I know when you are giving bullets to a soldier, you take the numbers. So that if any bullet is misused and somebody kills, from that bullet you'll be able to trace the soldier that fired the bullet from his gun. This is not being done. So when you say they are terrorists, these are children that have been pushed to that extreme.
The government is saying that it is in the process of resolving the situation or the crisis generated by concerns of English-speaking Cameroonians, and that agitators are trying to cause trouble and destabilize those parts of the country, making it ungovernable.
Yeah, but when you keep drilling people up and down, we resolve this, we resolve this, and you never do things. You push people for 35 years, sir. I don't think that some of the people will be able to stomach it the way some of us do.
But the president recently sent emissaries to come and find out the concerns of English-speaking Cameroonians to address them. Isn't this a good move to resolve this problem once and for all? 35 years in the making, as you said?
The problems are known by Mr. Biya, because the former president made Mr. Biya the secretary of a commission is sent to look into, is set up to look into the Anglophone problem. So Mr. Biya is very, very aware and knowledgeable and has the Anglophone problem on his fingertips. So when they start setting commissions to go look into this, sending people to go and tell people this, those are just factors to consume time, to waste time.
What is your party, the Social Democratic Front, doing in its capacity as a prominent opposition party in the country to resolve this crisis?
We told, because we have no power to do that. We already told Mr. Biya, and I never just told him alone. I met some members of his government, from his ministers to members of his central committee, and talked to them to give an immediate solution to the problems. And the prime minister, in his capacity as head of government, has come out here to listen to the people, the teachers and the lawyers. And they agreed on certain minimum preconditions to be met, which we said, okay, Mr. Biya, sign this, accept, and let the people go to work. He said, oh, children should go to school before he signs. Why does he put the cart before the horse?
So what is next now in the resolution of this Anglophone crisis?
Let Mr. Biya do what the teachers and the lawyers want. If those things are done, we can start working. But without them done, because for instance, up to now, schools have not resumed. Courts are timid. Where schools have even resumed, it's timid. And things are still zero stable.
John Fruindi is the founder of the Cameroonian main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, or SDF. He spoke with me from Bamenda. Striking Ugandan doctors have defied a government order to return to work. Under the umbrella body, the Uganda Medical Association, the workers said they will not be forced to give up on their cause, but promised to maintain emergency services. The medical workers are demanding better pay, improved working conditions, and adequate supplies. The government has said it can't afford to meet their demands for now. Dr. Mukuzi Muhiriza is the General Secretary of the Ugandan Medical Association. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the capital, Kampala, for his reaction on the government's order to call off the strike.
The reaction is that was unnecessary. It was draconian. And we are saying that we are continuing on strike, but in a humane way, knowing that our main issue is to show our displeasure, not to hurt anybody. That's why we are continuing to do emergencies. The calling off is completely draconian. It is unnecessary. It doesn't augur the spirit of negotiation at all. So we are continuing the strike, but doing emergencies as we had directed.
So you're continuing to offer emergency services?
Yes.
It's been a long time since you put out your demands. How far are the negotiations with the government?
We have met various government officials. We have covered some ground, of course, because there's some stumbling blocks. On a scale of 10, well, there's maybe a 3 or a 4 out of 10 on our side. But we are very optimistic. We are upbeat. We made the president, His Excellency, the president of Uganda, and we are good on some things. And we are going to be following them up on Friday next week. So, while not everything is concluded, but we believe and hope that we have made some strides.
Do you believe, in your opinion, as an association, that government is negotiating in good faith?
I wouldn't want to speak for them. You could ask them, but on our side, I wouldn't really say that it is in good faith. Good faith, you wouldn't be using such language. You wouldn't be... So I wouldn't really say on our side that it is good faith, but if you ask them, they could furnish you with what they believe, whether it is in good faith or not.
And what do you make of the of threats by government officials, including directing... district leaders to supervise doctors in the districts?
Again, it's unnecessary. It's very hard, probably impossible. You may take a horse to the water, but I don't know how you can force it to drink. So we're going to engage them, talking to the government, talking to the supervisors, but at the same time, we shall, and we are already taking the legal route. We have contacted some lawyers, and we shall make sure that every member of ours is protected.
You seem to have support and sympathy from the public, given what's appearing in the media and social media. How far are you prepared to take your action to achieve your objective?
The simple answer and the practical answer is that we are going to pursue this to its end. Logical conclusion. Again, our aims are very clear and they are achievable. The very first aim is, of course, to see that this chronic lack of medicine, sundries, technologies, supplies is reduced. The second one is to really have this war on doctors and healthcare workers. They are arresting them in with impunity, be stopped. And the third is to make sure that a health worker is remunerated very well. In fact, not very well, at least adequately. So those three are something that the government cannot keep away from. It must address them. So we shall wait as much as possible to make sure that these things are addressed, at least in a harmonized and agreed upon way.
Dr. Mukuzi Muhiriza is the General Secretary of the Ugandan Medical Association. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. The World Health Organization, or WHO, reports pneumonic plague is continuing to decline in Madagascar. The latest WHO figures put the number of suspected cases at 1,947, including 143 deaths. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says the situation is improving. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says latest reported cases of pneumonic plague, based on the number of people hospitalized and on district reporting in Madagascar, is good news.
As of yesterday, 6 November, there were only 27 people hospitalized with plague, compared with 106 on 29 October, for example. This decline in new cases is encouraging and shows that the quick steps taken to support the government of Madagascar to contain the outbreak have been effective.
However, Shaib warns everyone must remain vigilant. She says new flare-ups of this deadly disease cannot be ruled out until the plague season ends in April. She says WHO needs $4 million to sustain its effort. She says much vital work remains. For example, she says samples from sick people and those in contact with them must be laboratory tested. She tells VOA, since the start of the outbreak in August, WHO has trained teams of people who have traced some 6,000 contacts.
This is a huge operation. This needs to be done because you would need to maintain a high level of surveillance. You will need to train people. You will need also to provide logistical help to the hospitals and health centers.
In Madagascar, Tomislav Jagatic of Doctors Without Borders tells Reuters that medical staff have to fight distrust as well as the disease.
What we're trying to do is we're sending teams of outreach, health promoters, to discuss with all the people in the community how the plague is transmitted. And also, most important, is we want to gain the trust of the community.
So far, there have been no reported cases of plague outside Madagascar. Shaib says WHO is working with all countries to strengthen their surveillance systems at the borders. She says WHO also is urging them to be prepared to quickly contain the disease in case plague is reported. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Alhaji Samuel Siddiq Samsumana was the Sierra Leonean vice president from September 17, 2007 until he was forced out on March 17, 2015. He plans to run as a presidential candidate in the March general election next year. President Ernest Bai Koroma says he sacked him on the grounds that he had abandoned his position and sought asylum in the United States Embassy in the capital Freetown and for not belonging to a political party. Samsumana joins us live here in the VOA studios in Washington. Hello, Mr. Vice President.
Hello, Peter.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
I can't complain. Now, so let me ask you this. Why did you abandon your position as the legitimately elected Vice President of the Republic of Sierra Leone and seek asylum at the U.S. Embassy in Freetown? Why?
To start with, this is preposterous and baseless. The grounds that His Excellency President Koroma at the time, who had sent two platoons of military officers while I was under quarantine to go and remove my security as sitting vice president on the grounds that he had asked me through a representative to resign because I did not support his third term ambition to continue, and our constitution states that it's a 5-year limit and a 2-term limit. And I did not subscribe to that because I didn't want to be party to any action of acting ultra-virus to the constitution. This being the foundation, Mr. Koroma, at the time when I was under the Ebola quarantine, self-quarantine, and the world heard about it, trying to lead by example that there is no exception to the rule. So I placed myself under quarantine. Fast forward, at the time of that particular action, I was at my residence, and then he sent officers to go and he said to change my security.
Hold your thought. We'll go to a quick break. When we come back, we continue.
Very much so.
That's Alhaji Samuel Sadiq Samsumana, a former Sierra Leonean vice president, joins us live here at the VOA studios. We'll be right back. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, we'll continue with our discussion with Alhaji Samuel Sadiq Samsumana, a former Sierra Leonean vice president. You were talking about the fact that you went into a self-quarantine and your detailed security was changed. If you could kindly continue.
Well, actually, the normal routine is that in a normal situation, I'll be informed by head of my security to come if there's going to be any replacement. But this was a special case wherein myself and 26 of my security officers were under quarantine. And being under quarantine, nobody is allowed to go to that particular premises. And unfortunately, Kuruma ordered head of the presidential guard to go and remove my security officers. And they took them to the Epic Center at the time. How would you send officers to a quarantine place to say you're going to change security?
So why didn't you make this known that the president plans to seek an additional term contravening the constitution of the land?
This was the this action precipitated to the particular action. So because I had refused initially, and I was under quarantine, and they expelled me from the party that I belonged to, but at that time that I was under quarantine, like but going back to the thrust of your question, is that while under the quarantine at that time, and those officers were sent to go and attack me, it was not an issue of replacing my security officers. So I was prepped by someone that you have to leave your house. If not, you're going to be killed. And I did. I left my house quietly in an uncovered, disclosed vehicle. And I left my premises and went to the university. Even though I was under quarantine, I had to run for my life. While there, and I called the head of the presidential guard, and he told me, and he's on record, that he is on oppression. And the oppression is that the president had given him the mandate to go and remove all my securities as a sitting vice president. Okay. Can you imagine that?
Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Vice President. You and President Ernest Bai Koroma were very good friends. You went to visit each other's house when you were allies and in government. You won election together. He chose you as his vice president and all that. What happened? How did you fall apart?
That's a million-dollar question, but that led, like I said, it precipitated because he wanted a third term, which was unconstitutional, and I did not subscribe to that.
You know, people are denying that he was seeking additional terms, and that, the foreign minister has been chosen by the APC ruling party to contest as a presidential candidate to replace him when he hands over power smoothly. So they said he's a Democrat through and through.
Peter,
talk to me.
Let me say this to you. I know Kuruma better than you.
True.
Based on the fact that he did not succeed for a third term, the world knows that he decided to also have an extension of 2 years. That did not work. And then he also pushed for 6 months. It did not work. But he got away with 2 weeks to add to the day he's supposed to hand over. And that having been me out of the way, because the third of getting me out of the way, preparing his ambition of third term, then the people of the Sierra Leonean populace and the national community frowned at it and they said that elections will be conducted and we have to go according to the constitution. And that speaks by volume.
Well, you left the country under certain circumstances, but what makes you think that going back to Sierra Leone to contest the presidency for political parties will be made smooth by the powers that be, if I may ask you?
I will go to this question, but let me just retract a little bit.
Okay.
I never abandoned my station. I never abandoned my country to go to seek asylum. Nkrumah announced that I had left my office and went on asylum. The next day, the American embassy sent out a press release that I never went to the American embassy. Fact that I was under quarantine. If I had gone on asylum at the American embassy, then the entire embassy should have been quarantined.
That's true.
Didn't add up. I said to them, you guys acted foolishly because I'd never went to the embassy. If I'd gone there, I could have been quarantined.
Now, back to my your question. Yes.
Mm-hmm. To your question of if I did go back to Sierra Leone in April of this year and went and registered. And I registered and then came out. I said to my people that no fighting, although there were issues when I went in, I resolved them peacefully without any falling to their trap of trying to coerce me into any difficulties. And I love peace. Peace is the foundation for everything that I do.
So realistically, what do you think your chances are if you are allowed to run for the presidency next year in March?
There is no encumbrances not to allow me to run. As I speak, I'm the leader of the Coalition for Change.
C4C.
C4C, correct. Right. I am the leader for the Coalition for Change, and I've been bringing a few political parties together so we can all come in and have the opportunity to fight the menace that we have a dictator in Sierra Leone.
So realistically, do you think the Electoral Commission has the ability to organize free, fair, transparent, and credible elections next year?
Yeah, with the support of the international community, it's ongoing because Nkrumah never wanted them to have the elections in 2018. There was all ambition to push it to 2020, and it never worked. So the National Elections Commission, did their best with the support of the international partners, and the elections is going to be conducted March next year. So I have a positive feeling with the international observers that we'll have a free and fair, transparent elections.
What will you do for the people of Sierra Leone? Let me come to you on that, because critics of yours are saying that you were a team with the president. The poor living conditions of Sierra Leoneans are squarely on your shoulders as much as it is that of the current president. So what different thing are you going to do for the people of Sierra Leone?
Peter, one thing that's very clear, excuse me, in African politics and African leadership, for the democracy that we have in, mostly you find, except you have a very good president. Usually the vice president is like a spare tie. You have to go by the dictates of the president, and you'll do what he tells you to do. But here's a case because I, with my contributions, making a reform in Sierra Leone, as vice president, things that I did, speaks volume. And I'll make sure that this time around, things that were not completed and things that I stood for, or the good governance in my country, which up to this moment is what I carry.
Your critics say you were just as corrupt.
Well,
the allegation leveled against the ruling party.
Well, they can vilify me because I was a member of that government. But they should also take a back step and recall. Look at, in retrospect, of what I did. That is, I did not subscribe to the corrupt governance of Nkrumah. That is why he forcefully removed me. If I was party to what he was doing, then I'll be there.
Well, some people deny that you were forcefully removed because they said even the Supreme Court ruled in the president's favor to say that you failed in your duties. That is why you were removed and you didn't belong to the party.
Well, let me tell you this.
I'm listening.
The Constitution of Sierra Leone, according to Section 41 of the 1991 Constitution, same as the Section 40 of the National Elections Commission, have set criteria that require you to qualify to become a candidate. And these are, you have to belong to a political party, which I was. Second, you have to be a citizen of Sierra Leone, belong to a party, and age gap of 40 years old.
Right.
So, did I abide to those criteria? Yes, I did. And I was elected. It doesn't graduate after you're being elected, because Section 5 of the 1991 Constitution states that sovereignty belongs to the state. So if that's the case, the people of Sierra Leone have decided that their vice president is Sam Sumana. So if that happens, in looking at the 1991 constitution, they set criteria based on the constitution of Sierra Leone of section 50 and 51. Both states how the president and the vice president can be removed from office. And the due process in section 53 states that it is through impeachment. Did I violate the constitution, or did I fall short of what it require for me to be impeached? No. Did the president take the process, go to parliament or go to court, or parliament to go and impeach me? No. He just got up and said, I'm removing you from office, from the party. And the party did not elect me to the vice presidency. It is the electorate of Sierra Leone, because Section 5 is what gives them the mandate, as that the sovereignty belongs to them. So if I am being elected, can you determine that whether it was my votes that made us win the elections? So this is the point. Now, for instance, if Koroma says that I am no more, because I don't belong to the APC again, he has expelled me from APC, so I cannot be vice president. Here's a scenario. If Koroma was expelled from the APC party, does that mean he cannot be president of Sierra Leone because he doesn't belong to the APC? It's baseless. So that is the situation that happened, because he had his third term ambition, and I did not subscribe to that corruption.
Before we go, let me ask you this. Analysts are saying that there are so many political parties vying for power. Why wouldn't you come together as a coalition to challenge the APC, who has all the trappings of the incumbency and the government machinery, to wiggle its way out of the plethora of all these political parties to win?
You said it all. The vehicle we want to utilize is a coalition for change, and to which I have already started working on that. When we have few political parties have already signed a communique that we are utilizing to work together, and more will come on board, because this is what we will have to do. No single party can be able to win the elections against the incumbent. We know that.
And how are you going to surmount the challenge of ethnic or tribal voting in Sierra Leone?
One of the things that I've already always been talking about in Sierra Leone, that we have to have a unified country. That I worked hard to bring into play. Because I frown at the pettiness of partisan politics when we should be more nationalistic. I frown at regionalism. I frown at tribalism. I frown at religious crisis. I have been working very hard in making sure that there has never been any religious crisis in my country. I have been working very hard, bringing people around me. Even opposition members of the other political party gave them job in my office as vice president. Because what is my drive? My drive is nation first. We have to put our country before our individual satisfaction. So I gave that chance, and we will be able to rebuild Sierra Leone if we can all have hands on deck. This is my drive under the Coalition for Change.
Well, next time we'll invite you to continue with this discussion.
You're very welcome.
All right, thank you very much. Alhaji Samuel Sadiq Sam Sumana is a former Sierra Leonean vice president. He joins us live here at the VOA studios in Washington. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Hey, this one na sara sara. The beat is tana tana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. Oh yeah, make you ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta. Hey, make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta. Hey, make you dance, yeah. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. This is for people with chalacha. People with kalaka. Yeah, nandi walanya. Nandi kalanya. You go make you feel better. This can take away palaba. This can take away wahala. You go make you feel Niger. Oh yeah, let's go to Kenya, Rwanda and Tanzania. Don't go Cameroon, Niger, Ghana, South and Sudan. Oh yeah, make you ricotta, ricotta mama. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah.
am easy, make you no fight, oh. Hey, you go forget your sorrow. Makachuku, you go buy and play for your moto, oh. Hey, hey, this one na sara sara. The beat is tarantana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. This is for people we chalacha. Hey, people we kalaka. Hey, and Nandi walanya. Hey, Nandi kalanya. You go make you feel better. This can take away palaba. This can take away wahala. You go make you feel Niger. Oh yeah, let's go to Zambia, Uganda, South Africa, Togo, Cameroon, Burundi, also Benin Republic. Hey, oh yeah, make you ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, hey. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, hey. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. One sara sara le, oh sara sara le. Make you dance, yeah. Sarale, make it dance, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ukona sara sarale, ndi bonine sara sarale, make it dance, yeah, 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 yeah.
My money, my body, now your own.
Is that real, buddy?
If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh, baby. Nadu, gara for me. Nadu, said hello. Nadu, shakara, oh. Nadu, gara for me, oh.
Yeah, yeah, busy, hutu. My number one in tutu. Sipping bruku tutu. For your love, it tutu. I go chuku, biko obianuju. Say you do me juju, cause I'm feeling the juju. Shake it to you, I wanna dash it to you. You can have it to you. You know I got this in you.
I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, you. I like your mini skirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fancy, yeah. If I tell you, hey, I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh, baby. Nadu, gara for me.
My number one in tutu. Sipping bruku tutu. For your love in tutu.
I go chuku.
Biko obianuju. Say you do me juju. Cause I'm feeling the juju. And you know say nobody only. But I don't go tell you story. I gotta be your man. I gotta be your man. Let me talk to you. Say a few things, girl, I'm feeling you. But it's up to you. Say you know I got this.
I love you. There's nothing above you.
Bridget, yeah. I like your mini skirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fancy, yeah.
If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby.
30 billion for the account, yo. Yeah. Versace and Gucci for your body, yo, baby. Nadu, for me. Nadu, sera.
Mix Monster.
I feel it deep in my soul, and I know now.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Why you gonna do like that? Why you gon' keep that thing from me? Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Girl, come feed me, don't be stingy. Why you gon' do like that? No, baby, don't do like that. Oh, I want you to know. Say I like the way you do. And you sabi do the dance. So you just speak everything. Go, 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 baby, you know. Say you got it, no be small. So be told me love, shake a girl, it's control. Girl, I like the way you, like the way you, I like the way you dance for me. I like the way you bounce for me. Yeah, I like the way you bend like say you want to greet your mommy. You bend like say you want to park your money. Just bend like say you want to kneel for daddy. Just bend like say you don't send anybody. Why you gonna do like that? Why you gonna keep that thing from me? Why you gonna do like that? Why you gonna act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Baby, don't tell me you don't know that you're beautiful. No, baby, don't do like that. I know you feel it in the bone inside your body. I know you need someone to hold somebody like me. I know you want a piece of me, of me. You wanna say my name. So tell me why you don't wanna spit it out. Why you gon' keep that thing from me? Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Baby, don't tell me you don't know that you're beautiful. Don't do like that. You make me say, if I hold you so tight, cause your type will be ready, yeah. Your smile not ever, yeah. Let me know right now, if you're ready right now, cause your type will be ready, yeah. Your smile not ever, yeah.
Let's show them. Make we let London.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producers Odette Frazier and Tadi Abeje, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the hunter in pursuit of an elephant does not stop to throw stones at birds. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States welcomes the Lima Group's leadership in addressing the deteriorating situation in Venezuela. The Lima Group was formed in August 2017 with the goal of bringing coordinated international pressure on Venezuela. The group includes Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, and Peru. In a recent meeting in Toronto, the Lima Group declared support for the provision of humanitarian assistance for the Venezuelan people and condemned electoral abuses. The group called for electoral reforms, including a new National Electoral Council, the release of political prisoners, and support for the democratically elected National Assembly. These positions, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, reflect the same principles and concerns underpinning the unwavering position of the United States. We welcome all efforts in support of the Venezuelan people as they struggle to secure a more democratic, peaceful, and prosperous future. We urge others in the international community to join the Lima Group and the United States in opposing the Maduro regime's authoritarian actions, which are responsible for the worsening political, economic, and social crisis facing the country and the Venezuelan people, said Ms. Nauert. Maduro's government crackdown on the opposition has taken a toll. Public protests this year have led to more than 125 deaths, thousands of arrests and injuries, and widespread damage to property. The Lima Group noted that the regime is intent on dividing the opposition and called on groups to work together. It's a very important point, said Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland. The people of Venezuela, in their struggle to reestablish democracy in their country, deserve an opposition which is united and can represent them effectively. As long as the Maduro regime conducts itself as a dictatorship, said Ms. Nauert, we will continue to bring the full weight of American economic and diplomatic power to bear in support of the Venezuelan people as they seek to restore their democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.